behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the show. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are here with our super producer, Noel Deathproof Brown. And as always, that means you are tuned in to Car Stuff.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about a very interesting character today. It's not a hero. It's not a legend. It's not part of our legend series or anything like that. But yeah. This is something different. It's something that was in the news, I guess it would be late July, early August, when this was kind of making the rounds in the blogs and, you know, the car sites and stuff. And Ben, you wrote an article about this for our How Stuff Works Now program, right, or for the site, and even a short video, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What we're talking about today, ladies and gentlemen, is a character named Graham. So let's set the scene first, right, Scott? We live in amazing times. What a time to be alive, you know. With the invention of the automobile, the ability to travel from one part of the world or your country to another became all of a sudden feasible for more and more of humanity. Because, you know, for thousands of years before, people could live and die easily within 25 miles of where they were born.
Oh, sure. It was very accessible now. And we can't ignore, of course, the airplane as well.
Right. And the airplane.
Shortly thereafter. But today we'll focus on cars. But you're right.
Yeah.
Cars really brought people together and apart.
Right. Spot on. And enabled this astonishing opportunity that very few people before had ever had, the ability to travel long distances. So in just a comparatively brief span of time, this ability to travel has skyrocketed, has accelerated and escalated so precipitously, and it seems set to continue, not just in air travel, but also in the world of auto manufacturing. In 2015 alone, U.S. auto manufacturers sold 17.5 million cars and light trucks. And that smashed a record that had stood for 15 years. So not only are we still making cars, we're still buying them and we're making more. And these cars are getting smarter and smarter. Longtime listeners, you guys know that Scott and I have talked about this often. Sometimes the good side, where they save lives, and sometimes, like, I don't know if I want to call it the bad side, but the sort of the eye-rolling hassle side, which is the regulations can increase the cost of cars and the weight and can be a bummer.
Tremendously. I mean, we find out that, you know, all the stuff that a car has to have in order for it to be road legal these days requires it to be just – basically, I mean, we could just say it. It's typically out of the reach of most people to buy a brand new car without extending their credit, extending themselves, you know, working overtime in order to be able to pay for that new vehicle.
Tightening their belt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is. What's the average price of a new sedan now? That's what we always set like the bar at, right?
It's over 32,000 now.
I thought it was around 34,000 or somewhere around
there. Yeah, it's around 34.
It's pretty high, but that's just your average basic four-door sedan.
Yeah, that's nothing fancy. No blue ribbons on that one.
Of course, there's the high end and then there's the low end. The low end somewhere I don't even know what the lowest price vehicle is these days, but it's still relatively high when you look at, I guess where cars were even 15 years ago.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons that there's so much drive toward this increasingly sophisticated assembly of systems is because we as a species are trying to save lives. There's a dark side to this astonishing progress. And that dark side can be measured in absolute concrete numbers. Scott, you did a fascinating, and no offense, man, but somewhat dark prediction that was absolutely accurate. Do you remember?
I do remember. That was a death toll on Georgia roads last year, right? I think it was last year we were talking about this.
Yeah, and it was toward the, toward the earlier end of the year.
Yeah, and all I did was just take the math and just ran it consistent throughout the 12 months and ended up with a number that was very, very close to what it ended up being at the end of the year. And it was very high. I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,400 in Georgia alone, on Georgia roads. And I know if you go to a state like Texas, the fatality rate goes up like by double. I mean, it's probably already that much there. And we're only halfway through the year, or slightly more than halfway through the year. So the bigger the state, I guess, the more people are driving, the more, how do they measure it? Like millions of miles traveled? Or,
yes.
Something
yeah.
like that.
We have the metric.
Yeah. We'll have that in a little bit. But, yeah, there's just staggering numbers of roadway fatalities. And every time I say this, someone says, it's not as bad as it used to be. And there's a whole bunch of, different ways to look at this and run the stats. I know that, a lot of people can bend stats to make it fit their need or whatever. These are we're just giving them the numbers here today. That's all. We're not going to argue stats today.
Right. Nor the methodology. But we can tell you, for instance, the year before in 2014, some of the closest numbers we could get from the NHTSA, over that year. Over 2014 in the U.S., there were 32,674 accident-related fatalities. And this is despite, again, safer and safer cars, right? This is despite the engineers at automotive manufacturing plants around the globe working, in some cases, literally around the clock to create a car that can save a life. But this brings us to today's, this long backstory brings us to the question we're exploring today, and a question that was asked by an artist named Patricia Piccinini. She asked, what if we're looking at this problem the wrong way? What would happen if instead of adapting cars to protect our relatively fragile, squishy bodies, what if we tried to adapt people to survive in cars?
So like to adapt to the reality of what happens behind the wheel when you get in an accident. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would need to take place? What would be the level of protection you need in, say, your head or your torso?
Right.
I get it. Okay.
And so could there be a biological solution to that, essentially?
Well, see, at this point, you'd have to construct a human in order to do this. You can't expect it to evolve into this.
No.
Cars, of course, we're constructing cars. Like, you can say cars evolve, but really, they just get a better idea and they build a better vehicle. It's not a true evolution. It's not something that grows organically.
Right.
But we're
right.
talking about, like, if humans had organically evolved to meet the needs of an accident, I guess, the requirements to live during that accident. And man, what they have come up with is just totally bizarre.
Yeah. Folks, we hope that you do check out the video that Scott mentioned at the top so you can get a closer look at this. But Patricia worked with a couple of experts, a collision expert named David Logan and a trauma surgeon named Christian Kenfield, to get a good understanding from firsthand experience about what happens in the course of a collision, a car accident, you know, like what kind of forces are involved? What are the pain points or the most vulnerable areas of the body in the course of an accident?
I got to say, I like the three people that have come together to create this. I think that it's an interesting mix. You know, that it's an artist, a collision expert, and a trauma surgeon, and they were brought together by Australia's Transport Accident Commission, I think, TAC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can I take just a moment for a sidebar here?
Yeah, please.
I know we're just now getting into the whole Graham thing, but I got to tell you, Ben, I was looking up this TAC organization. And they've got it's been around since 1986.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing ads on television since 1989. And it's kind of the thing of this agency to kind of shock people with with their ads. And I don't know if you've watched any of their other ads, but this is like a project, a safety campaign, part of the TAC.
This is like raising awareness.
Yeah, Graham is. So it's going to be, we'll talk about what Graham is doing later, but, I went online and I was watching some YouTube videos of some of these ads because people were saying, well, they're kind of shocking in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some compilations and I saw one that, I mean, Ben, I don't know if I'm like overly emotional today or something, but it choked me up a little bit.
What?
Yeah, it really did. It was shocking. It was a 20-year anniversary piece that they put together. It was an ad montage of all the television ads that they had created. And it was done to the R.E.M. song, Everybody Hurts.
Oh, no.
Real slow and methodical. But it was showing, like, I mean, it was showing the accidents and, you know, everything that happens and leads up to it. But then it was like, you know, telling the families that their loved ones have passed, or people, you know, meeting people at the accident scene. It was gripping.
Oh, wow.
And then I started looking at individual ads. And I got to tell you, if you haven't seen any of the Australian TAC ads, they're extremely high quality. They're worth watching online. I mean, they're sobering, very sobering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the message is I don't know. It's a great message, but it's done in a way that it'll kind of choke you up a bit. And again, extremely high quality, almost like feature film quality. Really, really well done. So. Sorry for the sidebar on that, but I apologize. But that's the group that brought these three individuals together, and wise move.
Yeah, it's a wise move, and it's sort of disturbing. You know what it reminded me of, Scott? When you were a kid in high school, I guess junior or senior, I wonder if your school ever did the same thing. Listeners, I know for sure that if you are living in the United States, this happened to you as well. What our local LEOs or law enforcement folks would do was they would bring to the school a car that was mangled in a crash,
Sometimes
a fatal one.
Yeah.
And that was their big deterrent, you know, for the kids who are going to be, I guess, drinking and driving, or the kids who are just going to be racing or.
Well, you know, sometimes where I came from, they would occasionally park a car out in front of the school, like maybe during, or they'd drag it there and lay it there. You know, before homecoming or before prom or something like that, where they know that sometimes there's some underage drinking or just carelessness behind the wheel. And it's a sobering reminder of what can happen.
And this is a similar approach. And it is one that I would argue is effective, especially given that this applies in particular to Australia. But I think it applies in general to the world. We've talked a little bit about the vast road network of Australia. And we also examined one of my favorite things, which were the road trains.
Oh, yeah.
Which do check out that episode if you haven't yet. It's amazing. Imagine the longest tractor trailers on the planet, which I think they are.
Yeah.
Barreling through these roads. I'm going to actually go back and listen to that episode. But the thing is, with such a car culture, collisions and accidents do happen, you know, and what they're raising awareness of in this project is the vulnerability and how radically different we as human beings would have to look to have odds of surviving a car crash.
Yeah, it's pointing out how fragile we are as humans, really, is what it's doing, because you look nothing like Graham. Hopefully.
Can we talk a little bit about what Graham looks like specifically?
Yeah, let's do that, because there's eight features, I think, here that are distinctively, they're distinctive.
Do you want to start at the top?
Yeah, let's start right at the top.
All
right.
Because
you can go to the Towards Zero project site if you would like to see what Graham looks like.
Yeah, that's www.meetgraham, Graham like the cracker, graham.com.au. So, let's start at arguably the most human thing about humans, the brain. Graham is technically a human being. So that means that Graham's brain is going to be the same sort of brain that you or I or anybody else other than maybe Albert Einstein would have, right? But the package in which Graham's brain floats is radically different.
So normal size brain, but it's in this bucket size head. It's huge.
It's a gigantic head. His shoulders to his head looks more like a slow curve of a hill, you know, rather than
almost goes right down into his shoulders.
Exactly, it really does.
Yeah.
So our brains are all pretty fragile things, and they float in fluid, cerebrospinal fluid, and this is supposed to protect our brain from day-to-day knocks and jolts, smacked on the head, you know, maybe a cartoon situation where you hit yourself with a rake.
A frying pan, whatever.
A frying pan, yeah, whatever, what have you. And
don't do that frying pan thing. That really hurts.
We're not recommending it. Also, the human skull is built to fracture upon impact. to spread the force of an impact across, so it's not specifically becoming a hole punched in your skull into your brain every time you get hit with something. Graham's brain, however, has crumple zones, essentially.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, like his skull has these pockets. It's much, much thicker than our skulls, and it has pockets that allow it to take more of a forceful hit, and it doesn't fracture as easily.
Isn't the brain suspended by ligaments as well?
So that
it's more of a buffer zone, I guess, between the impact and the actual brain itself. I mean, you don't want the trauma really to reach that. And so, I mean, right from the very beginning, it's already making sense to me why they're designing it in this way. But it just looks so bizarre, Ben, when you see him.
Yeah, it does. This guy, for all our fans of metal listening, this guy's the ultimate headbanger. Because he really can. His brain is tied essentially to the inside of his cranial cavity.
Yeah.
And his brain is in a safer place, so it won't move as much, but it's also much harder for an outside force to get to that impact. I keep almost smacking my fist against my hand because I'm thinking of impact.
It's almost like he's wearing a helmet, but he's not wearing a helmet.
Right. Yeah. That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. And but so, even more exaggerated than that, because it's huge.
Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about his brain, we started talking about his skull. We can naturally go to that,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
So we said that our skulls are designed to fracture, take the force from an impact, and stop it from getting to the brain. Mm-hmm. Just like your skull is your natural helmet for the real you, your brain. Graham's skull looks like, if you saw it without the skin,
And you can on the website.
You can see some neat cross sections. Have you guys heard of that Ancient Aliens show where they have like the purported alien skulls?
Are you going to give any credibility to that show right now?
I'm not ever going to give any credibility to that show.
That's good.
That show actually makes things very difficult for people like me.
I bet it does. Yeah.
So.
And your other show.
On the other show. Yeah. Not in my day-to-day life.
Yeah. Okay.
But he does have like as Scott said, like an enlarged skull.
Yeah.
Enlarged brain case.
And since we're right there, let's talk about his face, because his face is different than a human face. And I wouldn't say it's very subtle either. It's completely surrounded by fatty tissue that would absorb the impact. So, whatever his face comes into contact with, the steering wheel, the windshield, whatever it happens to be, it is, I'd say, semi-protected. I mean, the eyes are inset, the sinuses are protected. Looks like, I can't tell from this view, looks like his lips still protrude a little bit, but man, I mean, his face is really, really fat. And you'll understand when you see it, the idea behind this type of design.
His lips do protrude a little bit, but his nose, is almost absent.
It's dramatically reduced.
Yeah, he has sort of like those Persian cats or some pugs, the part that would be protruding in his face, like the mouth and the nose, right, our rudimentary snout, absolutely buried in fat.
Yeah.
Flooded in fat. And there's even more on the sides, on his temples and on his forehead. So his eyes are very much recessed. And this means that this guy, in our current society, is probably not going to win, Mr. Universe or something. But it does mean that he is protected from one of the biggest dangers in an accident that a lot of people don't think about, which would be shattering glass.
Yeah. Yeah. And see and also he would be able to absorb the energy of an impact if his face were to come into contact with any kind of surface. So, the fat, sort of a crumple zone, but not as much as like the bony skull would be. This is more of a soft tissue. Of course, fatty tissue, but, the idea is just that it's a cushion, really. It's just a big cushion for his face. And imagine a face with a cushion all around it.
Right. Yeah. So he can, if he gets an impact from a bunch of glass, then it will only cut the fat. But if he also gets hit by maybe an object in the car on the side of his head, then it won't be near as likely to, break his jaw or his cheekbone or something.
Another thing that kind of compounds this or makes this even even more effective is that he doesn't have a neck. There's no neck at all, so nothing to protect. The weakest link, I suppose, in an accident usually is your neck. I mean, a lot of people, even if just a slight rear end accident, you get whiplash a little bit. You know, because your neck can't withstand. Well, what's the human head weigh? This is one of those facts that I always hear. It's like 8 or 10 pounds. I never hear. I don't know the right answer to that, but I think average is somewhere around 8 to 10 pounds. Mm. Your neck and the muscles around your neck just simply aren't strong enough, and you can't prepare for something. I mean, if you don't see the car coming, if you don't, you just can't hold it still.
Oh, I feel so dumb, yeah. Man. I know you guys can't see this, but I'll go ahead and fess up to it. While Scott was talking about how much the human head weighs, I tried to see how heavy mine was, even though it's attached to my neck. I'm sorry, man. I interrupted.
That's all right. No problem. So, yeah. So with no neck, there's again, no weakest link there. It's not going to suffer the whiplash. It's not going to be an area that needs to be protected.
Right.
It kind of is. I mean, with the item that we'll talk about next, which is the ribs.
Right. Yeah. And this is a great way to segue in, because you say, oh, he doesn't have a neck. What does he have? He just has an extended rib cage that goes all the way up right against his skull, which means that he can't do some things that we take for granted, like
look left or right.
Yes. Yeah. He has to move his whole body, and he's very top heavy, very top heavy lad. But if you think about it, that's not inconceivable, because his throat will still be able to work, right? It'll just have this tissue and this rib cage around it, and his spine will still be the same spine. It will just have these outgrowths. So although this seemed to me the second craziest adaptation, because the other ones are like thicker bones, some ligaments, a lot of fat, right?
Yeah.
But this seemed to be one of the most radical, and it doesn't seem as crazy as it might at first glance, you know?
Well, it doesn't end there either. I mean, you say that it goes all the way to his skull.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that the shape of his upper torso is like a barrel. It's like a barrel-chested person.
Yeah,
you've all seen a barrel-chested person. You understand what that means. So he's able to withstand greater impacts just because of that size. But his torso also, it's not like armor, like we think of, like the bony plating. It's more like an airbag.
Yeah.
Because,
exactly.
Because they've also built into, in between each of his ribs are, I think it is fluid, right? It's sacs, I guess.
Yeah, sacs of, this is so gross.
Yeah, sacs of fluid that are in between his ribs that act as a cushion.
And they have these little slits. They're like these bulbous things protruding from his rib cage, and they each have a little slit in the middle that looks kind of like a belly button or maybe a nipple, more like an innie belly button.
Yeah.
And what they're designed to do, just like you were saying, Scott, is to absorb impact rather than deflect it like armor. What they're doing is, when there is an impact, like say a steering wheel, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
When that impact occurs and it hits these fluid filled sacs, they excrete this fluid.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. Out of the little belly button things. And, it looks like there are about 10 in total, which is 10 too many for me, frankly.
So it'd be like squeezing a balloon with jelly in it or something, you know, that has an open end, because it would all come out that end. And then I wonder, I mean, I guess some of these things aren't answered, I suppose, but I wonder, this must like replenish itself after an event.
Right.
And I also wonder about the bony structure in the skull too. Like, you know, once that crumple zone's used in the skull.
Right. How do you fix it?
How long does that take to regenerate itself, if it does? I mean, I've got questions like that.
Yeah. And how intricate is the healing process? Because again, this would be, as we know, when a bone is fractured or broken, you have to take certain steps to make sure that it sets correctly. And this seems like this would be a level of magnitude more complicated because of the intricacy of those zones.
If it didn't set correctly, then it wouldn't be as effective the next time it was required to be used.
So, exactly.
I get what you're saying. It's like
Graham would still have to be a careful driver.
You know, he still would, because some of these things, it kind of feels like you get one shot at some of these things. But maybe that's not the case.
I mean, like airbag style,
again,
right?
This is all, you know, this is just, thought process.
A thought process.
Yeah. So the next thing is his skin. I mean, the overall coverage of skin on this whole being is thicker and tougher, so that it's not as apt to get abrasions in an accident.
It'd be tough to scrape Graham.
Yeah, so you know, in a minor fender bender, you get your hands get cut up, and you know, you get some nicks and cuts on your face, and just abrasions from the seat belts, and you know, whatever else happens. So,
and this is particularly important for people who are biking, like bikers. You know, have very little protection between themselves and the road if something goes south.
Sure, yeah.
So
I can't imagine this guy on a bike, though.
I don't know if his center of gravity would be suited for that.
No, he'd have to redesign the bike in order to make it work for this. It's such an unusual being or thing.
He could do like a trike.
Yeah, because you know, we haven't really said that. This is like he's like a sculpture right now.
Yeah,
right?
This is a real sculpture you can see if you visit this part of the world.
Yeah, sure. All right. He's touring.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So beyond the skin, there's also, okay, we're getting into some more interesting things here too. Knees. Now his knee, can you imagine that knees take a lot of abuse during even, again, small fender bender type things? You know, your knees hit the underside of the dash.
Sure.
You know, they get broken. Legs get crushed or pushed into areas that they're not supposed to be pushed into when an accident happens.
Or bent a way that nature did not intend.
Exactly. And so that's why his knees have movement in all directions. That is so weird. So freaky.
I bet he could really cut it up on the dance floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. How long have you been waiting for that one? Yeah, imagine if your knees could bend in every direction. How crazy would that be? I mean, I wonder if he'd be like a super fast ice skater or something. You know, like, would he? I don't know. It'd be kind of strange.
Like, he could do like roundhouse kicks without moving the rest of his body?
This is so strange. Okay, so it's really, I know we're laughing a lot, but you have to see this thing in order to understand. His knees are also fortified with extra tendons to give it added or even additional flexibility. So what a crazy design that is, but very smart.
And this is really important in side impact situations like T-bones and stuff.
Good point.
Because our knees cannot bend in the direction. Like if you are in the driver's seat of your vehicle and you are struck on the driver's side, then depending on what part of the world you're in, your left or your right knee is in very, very high danger of shattering because it can't move any other way except for front and back. And so Graham's knees, however, are probably just going to sort of swing over in the direction opposite of the impact.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, though, the side impacts are just so violent. If you've ever seen any of the you know, the safety films, the ones that show the side impacts, you know, crash tests that are done in a lab.
Yeah.
Oh, man, they're violent. And really, the speeds, when you look at the speeds, you will not believe how low the speeds are when you see the severity of the accident. You would think that the car is going 80 miles an hour, but it's not. It's like, it's usually between 25 and 35 miles per hour.
Right.
And it really, really intrudes into the cabin area of the vehicle that is you know, the one that gets the impact in the side door. It's a severe accident, so it would be really, really beneficial to have things like knees that can bend in any direction in order to prevent that. Of course, no neck, because your neck, a lot of times the person's head ends up going through the side window, you know, and you can imagine what that does to your neck and
it's
your spine.
Jolt.
And yeah, it's just, it's an unbelievably violent wreck. So yeah, well, and we've got one more, I guess, adaptation that he has, or one more, enhanced piece of design on Graham here that
now,
we need to talk about.
Now, this is the weirdest one. This is the one that I'm not quite sold on.
Really? I thought you would really like this one.
I like, on a personal level, I love it. Between you and me, buddy, if I had to choose any of Graham's adaptations, I would choose this one. But it's a little bit fanciful, which I know sounds weird in reaction to all the other seven we talked about. Here's the thing. The other seven adaptations are specifically designed to withstand a collision, an impact event of some sort. This is a little bit different.
This is almost like preventative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it gives him an appearance. It's below his knees, and we're talking about his legs and feet. So the legs below the knees and his feet, and they almost look like hooves.
Yeah, they look like goat feet.
And the reason is there's an extra joint in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an extra joint that gives him a, I'll just quote this, a spring-loaded jump if he needs to remove himself from the situation altogether.
So he can essentially jump like a frog or a cricket or the Incredible Hulk. He can.
That's crazy, isn't it? I thought of the cricket thing too. As soon as I saw this, it's so strange. Like it's almost like, he could just be standing there and just spring right out of this, like right out of the frame. You know, you wouldn't see him.
Right. He would redefine, the long jump in the Olympics, pole vaults, anything, because he has so much jumping force. And if you look at his feet, it looks like he has really tiny actual feet where his toes are. It almost looks as though the heel of his foot is extended up between his calves and the area behind his shins.
Yeah, like a foot up from there. It's so bizarre. It's really, really strange looking foot area. So give that a look if you happen across the website too. And I don't know, that's really a strange thing, but the idea is that if he's a pedestrian, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever, I guess walking down the road and then a car is approaching him, that he can, you know, jump out of the way of the car. How often does that really happen that you get that much notice?
Right.
You know, that much leeway, that you would be able to react like that. Cause I've heard of people though, if they know they're going to be struck by a vehicle, they do give a little bit of a hop. And it's mm-hmm. supposedly a good tactic in that you'll roll over the hood and into the wind. But the other side is that you might go through the windshield.
Yeah.
There's positives and negatives to this tactic. And I guess you have to kind of weigh the situation. You know, if it's a flat front end of an old Volvo, maybe versus, something that's a little more aerodynamic and has more of a curved hood. Again, Ben, you don't have a chance to react to that kind of stuff.
That's
like that.
The thing. You'd have to be so quick mentally to think of this. You know?
Yeah, you really would. And again, it's just an experiment, I guess, a design experiment. But it's an interesting idea. I just don't know if it's probably the least practical of all the ones that we talked about here.
Yeah, let's also emphasize this. Just if anyone has any concerns, Graham is not by any means a real person. And there are, to Scott and I's knowledge, no plans whatsoever to make a person like Graham.
Is it genetically engineer a human to look like this?
Yeah, I think that would be insanely cruel.
Yeah.
Will there be genetic engineering in the future for something like astronauts or maybe even extreme rescue scenarios? Maybe. I don't know, but that may as well be science fiction at this point.
You watch South Park?
I do watch South Park.
Do you remember they have there's a genetic scientist, or at least in the early episodes, there was a genetic scientist that was in a kind of a crazy, like, castle up on a hill in a spooky place. And this goes way back in South Park's history, like way in the early days. But the genetic engineer, he was always making, and his big thing, right? Like whenever they'd display his inventions, which were things.
Uh-huh.
He would always reveal it and be like, "Behold the four-assed monkey." And they're like, "Okay, that's really interesting. Like,
why did you make it?"
Yeah, and he's like, "Behold the four-assed toad." And like everything had
four butts.
Of course, it's South Park humor, so that's
right.
That's good. But it was funny anyway. So I doubt that anything like this will ever come around. And if it does, it's going to be like an Island of Dr. Moreau type of situation where it's completely illegal.
Yeah.
And really spooky science fiction type stuff, but it won't. But fascinating character. It's an interesting design study. And if you're in that part of the world, like Ben said, you can go and visit Graham. He's touring as part of, again, the Transport Accident Commission's show, I guess, their safety campaign. So you can see that. You can check out the website, which Ben mentioned earlier, which is the meetgraham.com.au site.
Mm-hmm.
And get an idea of all these features that we talked about today, and maybe even a close-up look inside of him, because it's kind of like an X-ray vision.
Yeah, like a cutaway thing.
Yeah, like a cutaway and a 360 view. Ooh. And really interesting. He's just an interesting character.
So here's another question.
Okay.
Would you take these adaptations? Would you be okay with having this physical appearance if it meant that your chances of surviving not just a car collision but almost any impact were so much higher? Yeah, me neither. I spend a lot of time not getting hit by things.
Yeah, you know, and also we've got stuff like what I'm about to share with you here.
Yes.
Volvo, as of early this year, in January of this year, has promised death-proof cars by 2020. Now, that's a bold statement to make, and I feel like we might have mentioned this already on a Nuts and Bolts podcast. We won't go too in-depth into this stuff right now because it's a bold statement, and you can never, ever account for everything. I mean, there's always going to be a situation where someone is going to die in that car, in that product somehow. We've seen it recently with the Tesla, the auto steer versus autopilot thing that is causing a lot of controversy. And I've talked about it with Jonathan on his show.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen again. Of course it will. There's going to be a new set of circumstances that the engineers just haven't, prepared for.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's going to happen again. I'm sure it will. It's just that was the first. And I bet you anything that's probably not the first human fatality in a Tesla Model S either. It's just this was the first one that happened under the auto steer. When you were using that application.
Yeah. And the problem is, with any new technology that involves this kind of stuff, it's very, very vulnerable to being shut down in its infancy because the public is skeptical, and rightly so. But Volvo, famous makers of the safest cars ever, if anyone can make a death-proof car, then it's probably going to be these guys.
Oh, yeah. I think that if it's possible.
If it's possible.
These are the ones that are going to do it. But here's the thing, Ben. I know we've mentioned this before. Now, one quick thing before we get to this, though. We had an episode on death-proof cars back in 2009, and a lot of that information has changed because this is 7 years on now.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this boasting that they're going to have a death-proof vehicle from Volvo in 2020, that's all new. So that's new information. But right now, as of, this is current, information that came out early last year.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't say it's current. It's the latest, I guess, in this. We won't know until probably much later in this year, if it still holds true. But at the time of this writing, which was in January of 2015, there were 9 vehicles on the road that had 0 driver deaths. And that's important to note. I mean, how they say that, it's 0 driver deaths. Now, I don't know if that means that passengers have, died or what. I'm not sure exactly what pedestrians,
and it certainly means that people were injured.
Exactly. But there were 9 vehicles that are on the road that were in a kind of a 9-way tie, I guess, for first place.
Mm-hmm.
And you want me to read them?
Yeah, please do.
It's the Audi A4, Honda Odyssey, which is a...
Really?
Yep, really. I had to bring it up. The Kia Sorento, Lexus RX 350, Mercedes-Benz GL Class, the Subaru Legacy, Toyota Highlander, and Toyota Sequoia, and then the Volvo XC90. And those were all, they all have 0 overall driver deaths per million registered vehicle years. That's the stat that I was looking for earlier, remember?
Yeah, because we have to have that measurement over time and distance.
Last thing.
Yeah.
Just so we're clear on this too, this is right around the 2011 model year. So you see how these numbers trickle in so slow. We talk about this all the time that you don't ever get the current year information until a couple of years later, several years later. So we're battling that too with our stats.
Massive amounts of data to crunch.
Yeah.
Also, it sounds like at least one of those numbers is wrong.
Which one?
Any involving the Honda Odyssey.
Why is that?
Because they're obviously cooking the books, man.
Of course,
all the way to the top.
Of course, they are. Yeah,
I can't. Wait. You would really do that to me on air?
A serious conspiracy. Well, I guess it was maybe just listed alphabetically. I mean, we could have put that down to the bottom of the list of the 9.
It's a corrupt outfit,
yeah.
Scott Benjamin. No, I'm kidding. I, longtime listeners, as you guys know, I am still working through some personal conflicts with Honda Odysseys. Mm-hmm. But if you are safe in a vehicle, then that is the most important thing.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel like we should do another show on maybe this goal of getting to 0 deaths in vehicles. You know, a lot of these groups or manufacturers even have decided that that's the way they want to move, is they're going to try to get to 0 traffic-related fatalities in their vehicles. It's a great idea. But again, how are they going to do that? How are they going to account for everything? How are they going to account for the guy that drives off the edge of a bridge into the water? How are they going to account for someone who drives right into a wildfire?
Right. How are they going to account for, in the future, malfunctioning autonomous systems? You know, the thing is that at this point, no matter how well it is planned out or how many variables are accounted for, at this point, no one knows how many other variables are actually out there.
Ben, you may remember this about a summer or two ago here in Atlanta. There was a situation where two semi-trucks came down onto the road from overhead.
Crashed
off the road. One went completely across the roadway. Another one ended up stuck on the embankment. I saw kind of the aftermath of this whole thing. I wasn't there when it happened or anything, and it was terrible. I think it didn't hit anybody. It was like a clean swipe through there without injuring anybody really. Other than some cuts and bruises and stuff like that. But how would you account for a semi landing on top of a car? You can't. It's just something, that's one of those variables that they're never ever going to be able to predict for.
Yeah, it's one of the dark lotteries of human circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, to claim that it's going to be absolutely 100% death proof, I just don't know how that's possible.
It's noble. Maybe it's a reach for the stars so you land in the clouds kind of thing. But they do have a lot of street cred behind this, and a lot of people that you could imagine easily dismissing this are hearing them out. And there was an excellent line in an article from CNN where they said that, assuming that you're not a suicidal maniac or a total idiot, in 4 years, you'll be safer driving a new Volvo than you are climbing a ladder to screw in a light bulb.
Hmm.
It sounds great, but whether or not an actual death-proof car exists or ever, you know, comes into production, the drive to do this is fundamental, and it is currently one of the guiding processes behind all automotive innovation. Even the stuff, honestly, man, even the stuff that comes from military applications or racing that later makes its way into the civilian world. Safety is key, and you know, neither of us are particularly enthusiastic about this big hoopla of autonomous vehicles and all the people who are like advocates for it saying, well, one day all the vehicles are going to be autonomous in the world. I don't know if that's going to happen. Or if it does, I don't know if it's going to happen as soon as people would like to think it is. But I can promise you that will not necessarily mean that cars are going to be death proof.
No, because of all the situations that we just talked about, right? That's still going to happen. So it's a really bold claim. It's an interesting claim. And there's numbers, you know, for the best cars and the worst cars on the road right now as far as, you know, driver deaths go. And we've got a lot of stats and figures that we could go through. So it seems like that's another podcast altogether, really. But I felt it fit pretty well with today's topic, which was this crazy sculpture, Graham. And I'd like to go see him in person. But also, he's pretty creepy, man. Like, I don't know if it would be it'd be a little bit unnerving to be face to face with this character.
Yeah, it would be like meeting one of the early humans that were not Homo sapiens, like a Neanderthal or something.
Yeah.
Be like, I know we're similar.
You know, here's the thing, though. I feel like this is the guy that I always sit behind at every sporting event. Because look at the size of his head. You see that? See that head? I always, like at the movies, football game or whatever, baseball game, I sit behind the guy with the melon head every time.
I can see you having a Larry David moment about that.
I do. It happens often. You know, it's like it's worse than having a big hat in front of you because the guy can't even take the hat off. It's just it's a giant head. So it's a lot like that when I see this guy. But I also think, like, it's interesting, you know, that he's got all these safety things, you know, all these safety features and enhancements and everything. But
yeah.
But did anybody think about this? He can't turn his head left or right.
Right.
So he's sitting in the driver's seat buckled in, presumably, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he can't really effectively look to change lanes.
Be aware of his surroundings.
Yeah, I mean, your mirrors would have to be exactly precise and maybe even additional mirrors. But then also, the way his eyes are so sunken in with the fat all around them,
yeah,
it's almost like they're forcing tunnel vision on this thing. I mean, that he won't even have very good peripheral vision, really.
I think he would have to be a passenger, actually. Isn't that terrible that he would be specifically adapted to be the safest living human in a car, but he is not fit to drive it?
He'd have to give up control.
He'd have to sit in the back, man.
Yeah.
Or maybe shotgun. He could sit in shotgun, I guess.
Well, sure, I guess if there's room. I mean, he's got that enormous torso. I mean, that's the other thing is that you know, here's the thing. We're talking about, you know, not adapting the car to meet humans. We're talking about adapting the human to meet the cars. But then the size that he ends up being and the shape that he ends up being, I think a seatbelt, a standard seatbelt, sure, that probably would work. He's got enough of a shoulder there, just barely a hint of a shoulder. But think about the design of a current vehicle. He really wouldn't fit in a normal seat. He's enormous. He's got this really weird shape to him.
He would definitely have to be in a larger vehicle.
Yeah.
Maybe like an SUV with a bench seat.
Oh, well, see, that's the top nine vehicles on our list here of safest vehicles too. Yeah. So, maybe there's something to that, you know, that, they know that either way. I mean, I guess he's going to have to be in a big vehicle.
Yeah. You can't squeeze him in those captain chairs. And also, you know, what we're seeing here is one artist's conception, a what if question, right? But what's happening in reality is that the technology that drives everyone's automobile is evolving at a rapid pace. And the car that you would buy today is going to be almost a different species of vehicle in comparison to the car that someone born today would buy when they became 16.
Exponentially safer.
Exponentially safer, probably exponentially more expensive.
In the future, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who knows if they're able to drive it themselves. I hope they are, because I think that is a fundamental coming-of-age ritual. But for now, we are going to keep our eyes peeled, our ears to the ground, and we're pretty good at keeping a lookout because our next turn. So we will keep you updated on the evolution of the death-proof car, which has a fascinating thing, and I think we're going to hear more and more from Volvo as they get closer to this.
I just thought of another thing Graham couldn't do.
What's that?
He couldn't put his ears to the ground. It's like he has no ears.
They're he just has these ear holes.
It's almost like holes, and I don't even know if he could get his head close enough to the ground the way he's shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Might need some assistance to get back up.
Yeah, I don't know how good he would be at actually walking either. You know what I mean?
I don't know. He's good at jumping.
Well, we have questions. We have questions. We have more questions than answers with Graham, the crash-proof man. But we also have listener mail. All right, Scott, this is a recent one that came to Car Stuff's Facebook page. You can follow us. We're Car Stuff HSW. And Scott has some amazing posts on there all the time. And it comes to us from Nick Sandor Fabian. And Nick says, hey, I just started listening to your podcast recently, and I think it's great. There are a lot of episodes, though, and I heard the one on stick shift and was wondering if you have an episode on dual clutch like I have in my Hyundai Veloster.
Ah, so he's got an automatic transmission with a dual clutch. We have not really talked about the inner workings of automatic transmissions in a long time.
Yeah, we did stuff on manual transmission.
Yeah, I think we did. And I'm sure we touched on automatic sometime in the past, but not likely on dual clutch technology. I mean, there's a ton of variations of automatic transmissions out there right now that really cutting edge stuff, really, really good stuff. I mean, a lot of people are opting now for automatic over manual transmissions in sports cars. And sometimes they're not even available in some sports cars, which, you know, imagine 15, 20 years ago, that never would have been the case. It would have been the opposite. It would be, you can't get an automatic in there, but now they're not only offered, they're the only thing offered, and sometimes they're, if they offer both, sometimes the automatic is maybe the better choice if you're looking for, like, shifting speed and
optimal timing. But the thing is, it's so weird because for decades before now, getting a sports car, high-performance vehicle with an automatic transmission was like getting a steak well done.
Yeah. You know? they don't call it a slush box for no reason. I mean, it was a different animal back then.
For sure.
And now, and I know there were good examples of automatic transmissions back then too, but, for the most part, not anything like what they are now. So yeah, we'll
look into that. We haven't done some transmission stuff in a while.
Yeah, some new transmissions and talk about really some of the benefits of automatic versus manual and
the new tech coming out.
Yeah, like why you might opt for one over the other.
Yeah. So thanks so much for checking out the show, Nick. Even more so for writing to us. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to take a page from Nick's book, you can contact us. We are on Twitter and CarStuffHSW there as well. You can go on our Twitter and Facebook to check out some stories or to ask us questions, see some behind-the-scenes stuff. And if you would like to check out some past episodes that we mentioned earlier in the program today, you are in luck. You can visit our website, carstuffshow.com, and check out not one, not even 200 or 300, the way that iTunes cuts it off, but every single podcast Scott and I have ever done for free.
We are above 750 at this point. I think we're ballpark. I'm going to get ballpark this. About 760, somewhere around there.
Smokes.
Yeah, we're getting up there.
All right. Well, let's aim for 1,000.
Yeah. Yes, let's do it.
And if you have a suggestion for an upcoming episode, if you have a story about Death Proof cars or a reaction to Graham the Crash Proof Man, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.